Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 10 of NML Crossing, where, wow, it's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks in a row, which, to be completely honest, I wasn't banking on 2 days in a row, much less 2 weeks, so that's a win. My track record insofar as, pretty much every measurable track record one can have in life. I've been a little bit not great at maintaining any sort of, I don't know. It's been a very unproductive little bit in my life, so without going too deep into it anyway. It's pretty cool to have 2 weeks of NML Crossing under our belts here. It's really just very nice to have sort of kind of set a goal, and we're still kind of on that path. That's a win. That's a definite win. Not much more of a pre-ramble today, and in fact, this might be a pretty short one, because it's not a bad issue. It's a really good issue, actually. It's one of those where it's kind of just like stuff happens, and we're just gonna have like a recitation of events, you know? But if we go by like X-Lapse logic, anytime I'd threatened that an episode was going to be short, I'd find some sort of silly tangent to drone on about. Words, I tell you, words are tough. So we'll see. We'll see where the conversation takes us. So let's hop right in. This is Batman, Shadow of the Bat number 74, which had a May 1998 cover date. Cataclysm, Part 9, The Naked City, written by Alan Grant, with pencils by Mark Buckingham, however we say his name. Thankfully, there's a letter in this very issue that invites us to just call him Bucky. I don't know that I can do that either. I don't know. Anyway, so pencils by him, inks Wayne Foucha, colors Pam Rambo and Android Images, letters Bill Oakley, edits Gorfinkel O'Neill, cover price $1.95. Now, this chapter opens with Batman arriving back at the Gotham docks, of course, after quelling that riot over Blackgate last chapter and last episode. Not that we're getting any sort of editorial footnote to point us in that direction, but, yeah, what are you gonna do? Now, it goes without saying, Batman is exhausted and in a tremendous amount of pain, and all of this is narrated quite purpley. I tell you, maybe I just never noticed Alan Grant's writing style before. But just like last time, it's this sort of like poetic, almost like lyrical sort of stuff. And I mean, that's not good. It's not bad. It's just something that I'm like kind of like hyper noticing right now. I'm like hyper aware of this prosy sort of narration we're getting. Anyway, Batman pulls himself up onto dry land and surveys the damage left by the very bad thing that happened at 7:03 p.m., which is to say, he sees that pretty much the entire city now lay in ruins. In the distance, our man hears someone crying out for help. You see, there are survivors buried in a cafe that had collapsed on them, and Bruce is able to dig them out. From here, we hop over to Bludhaven, Bloodhaven, where we rejoin Tim Drake, who's, he's trying to broker a way into Gotham. You know, of course, he wants to see his dad, he wants to see Bruce, he wants to just see the city he lives in. Now, the officer he's speaking to is, he's not interested in facilitating his passage. Tim's told that it could be weeks before roads into Gotham reopen. And to, you know, go cool your jets at the Bludhaven lodging that had been arranged for he and his fellow passengers. Tim, he decides to just steal a nearby motorcycle and helmet instead. So, Tim's headed Gotham way. Back to Batman as he's taking roll call at the Dockside Cafe to ensure that everyone's been rescued and accounted for. Now, one of the survivors reports that she heard some cries for help down a nearby alley. Batman pops off a handful of pain and sugar pills from his utility belt before heading off to rescue the next bunch of folks. Oh, and he also tells this current crop of survivors to stick together and either head towards GCPD HQ or Wayne Tower. We follow our hero down that alley, where we meet a fivesome of homeless fellas. At least I think there are five of them. There's a bunch. One of them, called Legs, is blamed for causing the earthquake due to an ear-shattering belch that he'd let out just before it happened. So, huh. Maybe Legs is the big bad that we read about in that Wizard magazine article. Maybe we'll get more information on that today. Who knows? Anyway, Batman arrives and saves the street folk just in the nick of time. You see, no sooner do they get out of their hidey hole than it collapses onto itself very, very dramatic-like. Now, after taking in an eyeful of the fallen city, one of the guys, this is a dude who fakes being blind in order to panhandle. This is complete with a sign that says blind that he's wearing around his neck, so it's kind of silly. Now, this fella, he celebrates the fact that now all the Gothamites are going to know what it feels like to live on the streets. And, you know, one of his fellow hobos reminds him that, hey, dude, if everybody's poor, there's nobody left to panhandle to. Which, almost feels like there's some sort of statement being made. But it's like something kind of nebulous that I can't put my finger on. I don't know. Anyway, Batman advises these goobers to head to GCPD HQ or Wayne Tower. From here, we shift scenes to the apartment of Jolene Relazzo? Jolene Relazzo? You remember her? Huh. Now, we see her frantically throwing herself against her apartment door, but she just can't seem to break through. We learn here that she lives in a posh Wayne-owned building because, you know, they're quake-proof. And, of course, this quake was something that she's long been worried about or kind of obsessed with. Now, unfortunately for her, the non-Wayne-owned skyscraper next to hers kind of toppled over onto the one that she's currently trying to escape from. And so, despite all her worry and preparedness, she's stuck. She's barred in. From here, we hop back to Batman, who's currently tromping around Gotham, saving scared civilians as he tries to make sense of things. Or, at the very least, plan his next move. His thoughts go to his friends and family. Alfred, Harold, even Ace gets a mention. After being rattled by another aftershock, he stops and considers an option that he didn't initially want to pursue. From here, we jump over to a couple of mooks, named Dunk and Moe, and they're currently on orders from their big boss in order to kidnap some, quote, nutty dame. And we follow them into a still-standing building and up several flights of stairs. Might be worth noting that these buffoons did try the elevator first, despite everything. Anyway, they eventually find themselves outside the door of a Jay Relazzo. Hey, remember her? Well, they ram their way in and then jam a pistol into her face, so I guess she's the nutty dame in question. Next stop, the Iceberg Lounge, base of operations for the Penguin. Who I want to say at this point in time had portrayed himself as having gone straight. Like everything's on the up and up and always has been. He's, you know, a businessman. He's sitting there and he's giving out orders. He's giving his goons the orders to start looting. Now, these orders are interrupted by the arrival of Batman. From here, we hop over to the GCPD HQ, where Babs is recruiting some much-needed medical personnel. Her father approaches to insist upon her what a terrific job she's doing and how many lives she's saved since 703. At that same time, the group of survivors from the cafe arrive, just as Batman instructed them to. Let's hop back to the Bat, where he and Oswald are having a kind of contentious chat. Now, Batman knows that Oz is dirty, he just can't prove it. Oh, and also, due to the major disaster, Gotham's in a sort of martial law situation. I don't know if it's officially martial law, nobody announced it, but I guess it stands to reason when, you know, the apocalypse hits, it's everybody for themselves. Now, this is to say, looters are probably going to be shot on sight. Everybody's going to be assumed to be very, very dangerous at this point. So, you know, maybe don't send your goons out to steal stuff, is what he's trying to insist upon old Cobblepot. Now, it's here where Batman decides to share the reason for his visit to the Iceberg Lounge. He proposes that they team up in order to get Gotham back to normal as quickly and as easily as possible. Cobblepot is not immediately on board, and he'd kind of like to know what's in it for him. To which, Batman's kind of like, well, if you don't, I will rain down so much hell upon you, yada, 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 yada. And so, bingo bango, we got us a bat and bird team-up. Now, Batman takes a gang of penguin goons with him to the nearby ruins to start digging up survivors. We close out our issue. Okay, we close out our issue at a Gotham television station, where a strange bald man with a Q on his chest is delivering a message. He introduces himself as the Quake Master. And he claims responsibility for the very bad thing that happened at 7:03. He demands $100 million or else he's going to do it all again. So, okay. That's our cliffhanger. Next time out, it's anthology time. We're going to be taking a look at several stories in Batman Chronicles number 12. Now, before we get into my hard-hitting, bulletproof analysis of this issue, let's pop into a Wizard magazine. This is going to be Wizard number 79, March 1998 cover date here. We got some blurbs, really. That's about it. You know, Wizard kind of wasn't into DC so much, unless it was like Kingdom Come or JLA. Or Hitman, I guess, or Vertigo. Okay, so they liked some DC stuff, just not the stuff we're talking about. So it doesn't really get a whole lot of play, despite the fact that, I mean, even looking back, this is a pretty big story. And as I've said before, it's a brave story. I mean, over the years, a lot of stories have been, you know, called brave, but this one actually, like, fundamentally breaks down an entire, it's an entire corner of the universe, you know? And like, I think we've said this before on the show, it's like, kind of like DC is a corner in the Bat Universe sometimes, so pretty big deal. Anyway, let's hop into what Wizard had to say about a few of the books that we've already covered. We're going to look at Nightwing number 19, which is labeled as a Read This Book in Wizard, so I guess high recommendation. Here we got a few quotes from Chuck Dixon. Talking about the issue, he says, "It's Scott McDaniel drawing an earthquake. I've got to tell you this, the destruction is incredible. He is super duper at these disaster scenes." And, you won't get any argument from me. I think, in their own way, all of the artists that we've seen so far have just absolutely killed it with their, you know, with their pan over scenes and their shots of this new normal for Gotham. It's just been amazing work. In fact, and not to, you know, spoil anything or put the cart in front of the horse, we're going to be covering the next issue of Nightwing in a few episodes, and I've already, you know, put together that script, and there's a page there of some destruction that it's like I can't even wrap my mind around how McDaniel planned this page. It's really something to see. And when we get there, maybe I'll remember to share it somewhere, because it's amazing, amazing stuff. Dixon continues, "Nightwing will be in Gotham for the Quake issues. In the next two issues of Nightwing, 19 and 20, he'll be in Gotham. And then he returns to Bloodhaven, because the Quake wasn't that far away. So there's some aftershock damage in Bloodhaven, and that's part of a storyline." And I guess I'll have to check out some of those issues to see if we need to include them here on the show. I suppose if nothing else, they could maybe be something we just talk about on the side as like little cutaways during the regular episodes. I guess it really will depend on, you know, how much the Quake looms in those issues. So, you know, just let me know your thoughts on that too. Like we talked about either last episode or a few episodes ago. I'm still not completely, you know, concrete on what we're going to include and what we're going to exclude and where we need to go and all that good stuff. So it's definitely something I'm interested in discussing for sure. The next book to get a blurb is Robin number 52, which we talked about a couple episodes ago. Yeah, they say here, "Robin, who's doing martial arts training in Europe, is going 10 rounds with the killer King Snake and Lady Shiva in order to save the life of his woman friend Dava. Then Robin's going to head back home to ... a giant earthquake in Gotham City. Now that's more bad luck than being Michael Jackson's son?" Huh? Wow. You know, a lot could be said for a Wizard style of writing, can't it? Michael Jackson's son, huh? Okay. From here, we've got two more blurbs, just listed under the Batman books, and it really is, like they pay no mind to these books, which is so bizarre, isn't it? I mean, the way I don't think, I was going to say, I don't think DC goes a week without a Batman book these days, but I honestly don't think DC goes a week without like four or five Batman books nowadays. You know, there's Batman on the racks everywhere, every week. It's ridiculous. It's to the point where it's like, I don't know, like the pendulum has swung so far. It's like, who possibly has the time or resources or money to be a Batman completionist anymore? I don't know. Anyway, the blurbs we got here, and again, they are just blurbs. Batman 553 is, quote, Batman buried beneath the Batcave? Believe it, Buster. I mean, that's it. That's all they say about it. We also have Detective 720, where Batman has to swim to safety and rescue Alfred following Gotham's devastating earthquake. And I mean, fair play, that's what happens, but wow, not a whole heck of a lot here out of the folks at Wizard. And now for the proverbial shiggles, we'll take a look at the top 10 for December 1997 here, because I just want to see how this big crossover event affects Batman standing on the top 100 as we go through it. Our top Bat book for December 97, so before Cataclysm kicked in. In position number 39 is Batman 551. So, can you imagine Batman, the ongoing, ranking like not just out of the top 10, not just out of the top 25, but like sort of on the back end of the top 50? Very, very bizarre. Worth noting, perhaps, the top DC book is JLA number 15, which is in position 10 for the month. And that's our peek into Wizard, and I'm going to try to keep these as, you know, these segments as small and as inobtrusive as possible, because I kind of think that, like, looking at the ephemera of the time is something that really only interests me. So I don't want to force that upon you, so I'll try to keep that as brief as possible. Of course, I invite your suggestions and your comments on the coverage of this sort of silliness as part of the series. I guess let's talk about the issue. Like I threatened at the beginning, there's not much to say about it. It's an issue where stuff happens. It's good. You know, it's all good stuff. It's just a lot of, well, I suppose, like, shuffling the chess pieces around a bit, which is pretty cool, of course. We got Batman, who's doing his best to rescue survivors, and is even getting into a strange bedfellows relationship with one of his worst enemies in order to, you know, serve and protect the people of Gotham. The Penguin, being that strange bedfellow, is introduced to the post-quake landscape, which, it's always cool when we are, I guess, reminded or informed just who is on Gotham. You know, who's still here, who's going to be, who might figure into stories as we work our way through. Jolene Relazzo is back on the scene, which honestly was a bit of a surprise to me, as I figured, I thought she was a one and done. I figured she already served her purpose to the story and really wouldn't need to be called upon again. I'd kind of filed her away in obscurity, like as a, you know, Batman-themed trivial pursuit answer or something. We got Tim Drake, who's back on dry land, and he's headed Gotham Way via a stolen motorcycle, so he will be here soon. And Barbara, of course, is still taking care of business at the GCPD HQ. Perhaps our biggest takeaway from this issue, you know, even bigger than Batman and the Penguin teaming up, is, well, we met the big bad of the story, I think. Oh, boy. For real? I mean, I'm both, like, annoyed at myself and pleased that I can't, for the life of me, recall this Quake Master character. I mean, at this point, I can't even say whether or not I believe him to be legit. Like, did he do it? Or is he just playing into people's fears and taking credit for it, hoping to get that, you know, hundo mil payday he asked for? Either way, he's just such a hard character to take seriously. I don't know if it's my own biases or anything, because it's like I can't see him and not think of the Shockmaster gimmick from, like, WCW in 93 or so, for wrestling fans out there. I mean, for those of you who know, you know. like, all I need to see now is for the Quake Master to trip over a beam or something, and my life would be complete. He's going to be a tough one to take seriously, at least at this point. Am I looking forward to seeing more from him? Well, yeah, no, I guess. I just can't see him actually being behind the 7.6er. Plus, I mean, if he were responsible for it, I'm sure I'd know something about that. Like, I'm sure that would be, like, common knowledge among we, you know, vaunted fake-ass comics historians. Which makes me wonder if I'll have to turn in my fake-ass comics historian card at the end of this. I don't know. Also, I mean, if he were responsible, I feel like it would take a lot away from the overall No Man's Land story. Like, to my mind, it should be a natural disaster. And I'm like 90% sure this dude's going to be fake. Or he's going to be, you know, a charlatan, you know. But like, it should be a natural disaster. Because like, we've discussed this. Natural disasters are both bigger and badder than the bad guys. And there's something that even the mightiest of superheroes can't fight. I don't know. I'm sure, you know, these questions will be answered very, very soon. I mean, the answer is really just a Google search away. I'm just not doing that for, I guess, dramatic effect and to not ruin the story for me. Like I said, we're going to know soon enough. And in any event, I suppose this is an interesting wrinkle. It would stand to reason that in a city like Gotham, someone might try to claim responsibility for something like this. You know, it just makes sense. And I'm guessing this is probably something that I will be mentioning and muddling over for the next week or two of episodes. So I guess we have that to look forward to. Please listen anyway. Overall, this issue felt like a truly progressive chapter in the Cataclysm Cross event. And I want to say at this point, we're at the halfway point. I think Cataclysm has 18 parts total. It might be 17, but I think it might be 18. I can't remember. I don't have my list in front of me. I feel like up till now, we've like been firmly putting pieces in place. And from here on in, I feel like things are probably going to start happening a lot more quickly. Well, maybe not the next chapter, since it's an anthology, which I'm guessing will be a bunch of vignettes. And, well, Chris from the future here, I wrote this script a few days ago before I read Batman Chronicles. In the time since, I have read it and scripted it, and, well, spoiler alert, yes, it's a bunch of vignettes. Again, please listen anyway. But having said all that, this was a great issue. The art was wonderful. Just real good stuff. I highly recommend it. I recommend pretty much everything we've covered to this point without reservation. So, I'm digging it. I hope you are as well. We don't have a mailbag necessarily today, but we do have some comments. I've been having a lot of really fun and great conversations about this project. Some by text message, some by DM, some on Facebook, some in email, some on the blog. It's really nice to be having conversations about comics again. Without going too deep into it, we're just past Christmas, right? We're just past the holidays. And this season was particularly rough for me and mine. It just didn't feel like the holidays. It was just a real down and dismal time. It just didn't feel special at all. And for me, one of the reasons it didn't feel special is because I didn't have a project going on. I didn't have a show going on. These shows and these projects, they don't sound like much, and they're really not much, but they're something, and they go a long way to making me feel like I'm, part of something at a special time of year. And not having that is something that I feel, you know. I mean, I work at home, so, you know, I'm not really out in community during holidays, so I don't see people bundled up in ugly sweaters. I don't get to see the lights as often as some others might. I don't get to see the decorations and the businesses dressed up. So I just don't get out much. So the show was like a nice little outlet for that kind of a thing. I mean, for the past 7 years, around Christmas time, the blog would change to Christmas on Infinite Earths instead of Chris's on Infinite Earths. And the X-Lapsed show would turn into Merry X-Lapsed. And we'd talk about, you know, Christmas stories and the X-Books. And it was just a nice change of pace. Got to change up the music a bit. Don't know. It was just my little ritual. And not having a show or a project going on in general is a weird feeling. But especially so around the holidays. It just feels like a missing piece. So to kind of be back in it right now and be having these conversations and chatting with people and sharing ideas is just, it's really helped. It's really helped me out here. So I continued talking to our new friend Eric, who told me that the Omnibus, the No Man's Land Omnibus, and the newest trade paperback collection includes Robin number 52 in its entirety, which I imagine that being very, very jarring, like we've talked about during that Robin episode, where it's like you go from the Quake in Gotham to some martial arts saga in Eastern Europe, and then back again. So I imagine that's probably a weird fit in the Omnibus and the new trades. I heard from our friend Andrew, who said that his newer but not newest Cataclysm trade does include the last few pages of Robin number 52, which definitely makes more sense. You know, it's still kind of an odd cutaway, but at least it informs the story or fits into the story. My Cataclysm trade is from the turn of the century, and it includes Robin 52 entirely. It goes straight from Catwoman to Blackgate, so we don't see Tim arriving back in Gotham City, at least not at the spot where you'd expect it to be. Maybe it's later. I haven't flipped through the entire thing yet, so maybe right before Robin 53 they put it in there. I don't know. But I'd like to thank Eric and Andrew for the information and also for chatting with me. It was a good time. Eric told me that he was referred to the show by the gang over at Weird Science, which that's where I got my start, over at Weird Science DC Comics. That was the first podcasting gig that I had. It was where I, met and started working with Reggie. Very, very special show, a very, very special group of folks over there. And it's nice to know that no matter how many times I've flaked on them, and I have flaked on them quite a few times, they're still friends and they still got my back. So big, big, big thanks to the GFC. Had a great chat with Walt that frustrated us both because we were talking about the volume numbers, Mishigas, that I've been kind of letting wriggle into my my brainstem and not shutting up about. But I'm always so interested in hearing how people count different volumes in the catalog, because, I mean, that's a pretty big part of, for lack of a better term, comics culture, right? We catalog things. We're our own librarians. And we build these libraries. So how you organize them, file them, and catalog them is, it's part of it. And I know there are apps that do it, and there are some great apps that do it. CLZ is one that we used to advertise over on the Cosmic Treadmill. And it's cool seeing how all, maybe cool is not the right word for it, because, I mean, none of this is cool. It's interesting. It's eyebrow-raising when you see how the different apps will count volumes. Like our man Ed said, he'll sometimes do it by the year of launch. And yes, there are apps that do that as well. There are some that have, like, Robin 1993. There are some that have, Robin Volume 1 as the first ongoing. It's very, very weird how there's no, like, universal currency as it pertains to how we count these volumes. It's been probably, every bit of 20 years since the last time I looked at an Overstreet price guide. I couldn't imagine what they look like now. I really, not just with the volume numbers, but with variants. I mean, you could have entire pages dedicated to, like, one issue. Now, it's pretty crazy. If anybody out there's been keeping up with the Overstreet, let me know how that looks, because I can imagine that being a major league cluster, like, to the point where it's like, maybe don't even bother printing them up anymore. And I'm a physical media guy, but oof. Anyway, Told you all at the start I was going to get lost on a tangent, didn't I? Let's wrap up with one more discussion that Ed had posited over on the Facebook group here. He had read the issue of Catwoman we covered, and he brought up a really, really great point that I don't know if I just glossed over it or got lost in the story or just plain shallow read it, you know? But he brought up the brutality in that issue, using the death of a child, you know, and it's funny, I didn't even stop to consider that how that's kind of a, I don't know, kind of like a shortcut or a cheat code to evoke reaction or emotion in the reader. I didn't even consider that. You know, I thought some of the dialogue was a little bit, I don't know, cliche in like a babyish way, like her telling Catwoman, not that she looks like a cat, but a kitty cat, and talking about her loose tooth, and I think that's part of the problem with reviewing, I think, at least for me, because I'm not very good at it. I kind of get stuck in this tunnel vision where, rather than looking at some of the, it's basically not seeing the forest for the trees, right? I'm so tuned in on, like, dialogue nuance and stuff like that, that I sometimes miss out on some of the bigger picture stuff, like this, you know, death of a child to evoke some sort of reaction or some sort of like a visceral either fear or empathy or whatever the case. But, you know, that's definitely something I want to be more cognizant of going forward. And I'm going to do my best to see that bigger picture. And I definitely want to thank Ed for sharing his thoughts on it, because I was completely ignorant to the scene that, I guess, I mean, we could look at it as something of a stunt, you know? And I mean, it's no excuse, but Grayson was very, very young in her career here, coming off of, you know, fanfics and apps. And I have, like, very, very little experience reading fanfic. I think I read one of hers for the treadmill episode we did, which was kind of a trip. But generally speaking, anytime I hear fanfic come up, a lot of it has to do with wish fulfillment, of course, but also, like, I don't want to use words like cheap, but like stuff like this, where it's like something that's there simply to evoke a reaction, but not in a way that really, I suppose, earns it, if that makes sense. Hopefully that makes sense. Because that's what I'm seeing now when I look back on this Catwoman issue. It's like, okay, we have this reaction. You know, even Selina, for a minute, has the reaction, and then it's kind of just over. And the use of a child there who comes across as almost too innocent in the scene, maybe that was something of a stunt. I don't know. Of course, I would love to hear everybody's thoughts on that scene and on, you know, the trope in general. I want to have those discussions here, and hopefully it'll help me out in order to recognize them as I'm seeing them, rather than after the fact. And it could be something we discuss in, I guess, quote unquote, real time. But anyway, I think that's where we'll cut things off for today and for this week, unless I do something over the weekend, which I probably won't. But if you'd like to reach out, you can find me all at the same places as always. Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com, WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com, 90s X-Men on Facebook, Ace Comics on Twitter, all those places. And like I said, I'm getting better about responding. So that's another win for 2024, Chris. I tell you, we take every win we can get. And with that, I want to thank everybody out there for sharing a little bit of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks, starting over when the story's got an astounding twist. You better turn that page. When push it comes to shove, we do not fall out of love, we dove.